Hello, Raider Nation. Welcome to the Believe in Raiders podcast. I'm Dennis Ackerman. Pleased to be joined by former Raider great Stanford Rout. Stan, we're about 3 weeks from the draft, and I think we can all agree that Raider Nation very excited after the team finished 5-4 under Antonio Pearson. And improved defense got a boost in the offseason, signing free agent defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. General manager Tom Telesco also signed quarterback Gardner Minshew. But Stan, let's face it, the Raiders would really like to draft a quarterback who could beat out Minshew and the incumbent Aiden O'Connell. Josh Jacobs, obviously a big loss in free agency, but now we're going to see if the Raiders could replace him with by committee led by Zamir White. Stan, the Raiders have the 13th pick in the draft. Give me the three positions in order, which are the greatest need for the silver and black.
Oh, in order. Oh man, that's what makes it kind of tough. Because there's still several needs that the Raiders have to address. I think that if we're going top to bottom, I would probably go with secondary, offensive line, and playmaker on the second level. Those would be my top three from top to bottom, my choices for areas of improvement.
Okay, Stan, so when you're talking on the back end or the Raiders defense, are you talking safety, or are you talking corner, or both?
I'm talking playmaker. So okay. I would go with corner before safety, but like I said, I wouldn't, you know, poo-poo it at a stud safety being drafted, but definitely need another playmaker back there. Obviously, we see what Jack Jones did the last couple games of the season. Obviously, 2 weeks in a row against the Chargers, they were led by Easton Stick. And then we see on Christmas Day, the pick six to the house against Pat Mahomes. But is that something that can be sustained throughout an entirety of a season? That remains to be seen. I think that you need to add another playmaker back there just because, once again, what is something that the Raiders have lacked over the last several years? Playmakers in the back end, blown leads that wind up being losses. So that's something that I think needs to be addressed, which obviously wasn't necessarily in free agency. So it's got to be addressed in the draft.
Right. You mentioned Jones. They also have Nate Hobbs, who's likely to start in the corner. And then Amik Robertson, I believe, signed with the Detroit Lions in free agency. So obviously the Raiders have a hole at the cornerback position. So Stan, let me ask you this. I want you to play Raiders GM. You're Tom Telesco. You're advising him. You have the 13th pick. Let's just say you stand pat at 13 and the draft plays out the way it's going to. Who would you select? If the player is there that you really want, who are you taking at number 13?
Oh, I'm taking Michael Penix. That's who I'm taking at the quarterback position. Number 13. I think he's going to still be there, even though I don't think he should, but that's who I would take if I was standing pat at number 13, or maybe possibly a Bo Nix. I think that he's going to need the right type of offensive coordinator for him. He seems more like his comp is more like a poor man's Drew Brees, as far as he's efficient. He's very accurate, very precise with going with the ball, things like that. So with the 13th pick, I'm looking at trying to draft a quarterback, because we see these top five, these top six guys that are going to be coming off the board. And if we don't take one now, what's going to be coming out next year? Obviously, you hear a lot of hype around Shedeur Sanders. Obviously, I get that. But who else in next year's draft? We don't know. Maybe it may be several other quarterbacks that are very capable next year. So right now, if I'm Antonio Pierce, I'm Telesco, I'm the GM. I just left the Chargers. Antonio Pierce, now first time head coach, they take the interim tag off. Now everybody's going to want to see what you can do. And we all know within this league, it's very difficult to sustain success without having a top-notch signal caller.
All right, let's get the promo read in here, and then I want to follow up with you more on Michael Penix. And BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs. Basketball, MLB, NHL hockey, right to UFC and boxing. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games. You can play it right from your home. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use the promo code BELIEVE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Stan, kind of a twofold question here. Michael Penix, two ACLs, two shoulder injuries. How concerned are you about his health? And the second question is, do you think you could possibly, as I mentioned earlier, the Raiders are selecting at 13. Could you maybe move back a few spots, try to get some more assets, second round, third round, maybe this year, maybe next year, and still think Penix might be available between 20 and 25? You willing to take that gamble?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. First off, to your first question about the injury history, I think as long as you're able to protect him, I'm not somebody that's going to really sit up there and worry about a injury history for a quarterback, because we look at Joe Burrow. Cincinnati's not going to be getting rid of him anytime soon, and he has injury history. So I'm not somebody that's going to go and really lament that very much. I'm not. I'm going to try to temper my expectations, or just should I say my any reservations I may have, just because I think that you got to have a quarterback. And he's one of my favorites from this draft, just based on his arm, ball placement, things like that. To your next question, trading back, getting some more picks, thinking he'll still be there, he very well could. And based on how all drafts go, somebody's going to fall. We all know that when within quarterbacks, somebody's going to fall. My year coming up, Aaron Rodgers dropped all the way to what? Pick number 24, I believe, something like that. So somebody's going to fall. We see that J.J. McCarthy is rising up draft boards, looking like he could very well be the second quarterback taken, as low as maybe the fourth quarterback taken. I don't know. But when you ask that question, that very well could be something that I would definitely look into on draft day, possibly trading back if I get the sense that the guy that I like is going to be available, depending on how far I wind up trading back to within the draft. So that's definitely something I would give some strong thought to.
Stan, you've talked about McCarthy, obviously Penix. We've got Caleb Williams, Bo Nix, Drake May. Who do you think is the most talented of that group, that from what you've seen?
It all depends on what you – what do you mean when talent? Be more descriptive.
I'm just saying who – okay, how about this? Who's the most pro-ready, would you say, out of those quarterbacks? Who's the most pro-ready to step in and play?
Oh – the most pro-ready, that to me is nuanced. And I say that because the most pro-ready, I would base that off of where they go, the skill position players around them, and also the offensive coordinator, or should I say the head coach. And I would say, in my personal opinion, I would go with maybe a J.J. McCarthy if he was to go to the Minnesota Vikings, because of the type of offensive system that they have, because of Kevin O'Connell, because Kevin O'Connell is not going to ask that quarterback to go out there and win the game. He's going to go ahead and lean a little bit on the run game, a little bit of the RPO, just the offensive scheme, the schematics, things like that. But if you're just asking me just based off of skill set, talent, I really could not answer that question. And I say that because every quarterback in this draft has warts. Every quarterback in this draft has flaws. Even when you look at Caleb Williams, obviously we know he's a phenomenal talent. There's no doubt about that. But Caleb Williams, we all thought was going to win the Heisman two times in a row this year. Caleb Williams, there's certain games where USC did not win big games. Now, obviously, we know the defense was trash. We know that. But Caleb Williams is not a perfect prospect. Caleb Williams plays a lot of what people would compare to a Pat Mahomes. Well, all that running around, all that throwing the ball back across your body to the other side of the field, things like that, you do that against a defensive end like Danielle Hunter, or you do that against a defensive end like Brian Burns, or a defensive tackle like Christian Wilkins, they're going to bury your head into the ground. So everybody has warts. You look at Michael Penix, obviously somebody, I'm a big fan of him, but look at the national championship game. Michigan made sure to go ahead, take away the second and third level ball, force him to throw it underneath, and then just allow the pass rush to collapse the pocket. And clearly, it was successful because Michigan Wolverines are now national championships of college football. So there is a number of warts on every prospect in this draft. So when you ask me who is the most pro-ready, I really think that you're splitting hairs, and I really think that we're really, really trying to find exactly the difference between 5'12" and 6 feet tall.
Stan, let me ask you this. You've coached at the collegiate level. Is there a situation, and Bo Nix comes to mind, can you actually stay in college too long?
I have heard of that theory where guys reach their ceiling. So by the time they get to the NFL, they don't have any other place to grow because they've been coached up to the point to where they've now reached their ceiling because they now have reached their full potential. I've heard a lot of that about some guys that come out of Alabama because they're receiving NFL coaching while they're at University of Alabama under back then Nick Saban. So I've definitely heard of that mindset and that theory. I think there could be some validity to it. I wouldn't go that far just because, I mean, who's supposed to top out at age 21, age 22? You know what I mean? Just from a mindset standpoint, just being around the game, the longer you are, you can't do anything but get smarter, but get to where you now you see the game a little bit better and it slows down for you. But yeah, I definitely have heard that mindset or that theory. So yeah, I can't push back on it too much. No.
All right, Stan, you mentioned Alabama, and there's a couple guys that I've seen in mock drafts. If the Raiders don't go quarterback, let's say at 13, they don't try to trade back. I've seen Alabama right tackle J.C. Latham. I've seen quarterback Terrion Arnold. What do you think of these two prospects, and do you think they would be good fits for the Raiders if they don't go quarterback with that 13th pick in the first round?
Well, for one, you see a J.C. Latham. He's been compared to Jawan Taylor. So that obviously is a good comparison. We look at him. He's a little bit more seasoned than Terrion Arnold. Terrion Arnold is going to be coming out as a redshirt sophomore. Played pretty good his redshirt freshman year. Only had one interception. This past season had five INTs. And when you compare Terrion Arnold to Akula McKinstry, Terrion Arnold has a little bit more elite, or should I say natural cover skills than a Kool-Aid McKinstry. But I think that either one you take, you better make sure that you have fallen out of the quarterback race, just because you can have all the players you need. But if you do not have somebody that's taking the snap from center that you fully believe in, who's going to lead your franchise for a number of years to come, I still think that you're going to be spinning your wheels no matter what. But I would probably go with Terrion Arnold over a J.C. Latham, just because I think that's more of a pressing need that the Raiders need in the back end to match with a Jones. And hopefully they could continue this string, or should I say this trend, of making big plays, interceptions to the house in the 2024 season.
All right, so I want to just go back to something you just said. With the Raiders picking at 13, let's just say the Raiders are up. J.J. McCarthy, for some reason, he's the only quarterback left on the board at 13. If I'm the Raiders, one, do I feel good about selecting him as their long-term solution? Two, do I really think he could beat out Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell? Do you really believe that? If he was the one left at 13, Bo Nix, everybody else, Michael Penix, everybody else is taken. My point is, I don't just want to take a quarterback because I feel like I got to take a quarterback.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Don't confuse activity with achievement. I get it.
Right. So I'm going to bypass a quarterback, maybe if McCarthy, because Stan, I still don't get the infatuation with McCarthy. So I'm playing a handful of times at Michigan. I know Harbaugh is a smash mouth, run oriented first coach, but it's a head scratcher to me, man. And if he's available at 13, I'm praying to the almighty good Lord, man, pass on him and go in a different direction.
I couldn't agree more, just because we don't know what we're really getting. Anytime you got a guy who's coming out of college in a run heavy offense where he's not asked to do a lot. I remember when they played Penn State up there in Happy Valley, how many times did he even throw the ball in that game or just in the second half? Not a lot. And no. So when guys come from those types of schemes, they're not asked to do a lot. They're not asked to simply take the ball from under center, play action fake to the running back, turning their back to the defense for about 1.5 seconds, where now they have to read the defense. You have to read that safety. You have to put that ball over the linebacker, under that safety, on target, over and over and over again to be an elite quarterback, or just to march your team down the field for a victorious touchdown, things like that. I don't know if he can do that. Now, I'm not saying that he can't, but right, we don't know. And if I'm picking you number 13, now obviously this is a different rate, rookie wage scale than it was back in the earlier years, back when I was coming out, but it's still a large sum of money that I'm sinking into a guy that I have questions about. So I'm right there with you. But every year there's going to be a quarterback that just seemingly shoots up the draft boards from the time of the last game of the football season into the draft, throughout the combine, the pro days, things like that. There's always going to be that. And then there's always going to be one guy that, man, why did he fall into the second round? There's always going to be that every year, and it just seems like this year is going to be J.J. McCarthy, and whoever's going to fall, I feel like it might be Penix. I could be wrong. I hope that I'm wrong, but that's what it seems like it's shaping up to be for the draft coming up in about 3 weeks.
All right, Stan, let's move on now. And recently, the NFL Competition Committee announced it had passed three new rule changes for the 2024 season. One of the biggest changes, the hip drop tackle, which is now banned. All right, Stan, as a former cornerback in the NFL, can you explain to our audience what it was and how much now it impacts even more a defensive player trying to make a simple tackle?
Well, for one, what it is you grab the runner by his waist or just his midsection, and you either A, now drop your body to go ahead and kind of anchor down to drag him down, or you swing your legs in a way to gain momentum, or should I say leverage, to then once again bring him down, which it really impacts the guy's Achilles. It impacts maybe a hamstring pull, maybe some sort of lower back injury, things like that. That's what it is. Now, as far as what was the second question?
Stan, how are defensive players supposed to tackle anybody these days? I mean, we keep making all these changes for the offense, and they keep saying, oh, it's a health, it's a security for the players. We don't want them to get injured. I mean, good Lord, how are you supposed to make a tackle on defense?
Dennis, the NFL is headed for a souped up, more entertainment version of flag football. I'm sorry to tell you that, my friend. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen tomorrow, but that's where the NFL is headed. So when you ask that question, how are guys supposed to tackle? That's the thing. They're not. Because what's going to happen is either A, this rule is going to get changed back to the original next year, or they're going to keep it and you're going to start to see more missed tackles. You're going to start to see more longer runs. You're going to start to see guys that are actually trying to think, okay, how can I go ahead and tackle this guy legally? Oh, you know what? He just ran by me. Oh, and I'm kind of scared to go catch him, because if I do and I grab him from behind, I'm going to have to do what to try to slow him down and bring him down. If I'm trying to tackle Derrick Henry after he's already broke for a long run, I got to now do what? Drop my hips. That way I can now become an anchor so I can pull him down. Oh, that's 15 more yards on the 40-yard run that he already has. So you're going to see a lot more big plays. You're going to see a lot more long runs, things like that. And players are going to start having to make certain decisions. And defensive coordinators are going to wind up pulling their hair out, because your D coordinator does not care about that rule. He wants that tackle to be made. He wants that touchdown to be saved, things like that. But like I've told you, eventually – this game is headed towards a big TV version, entertainment version of flag football. Everybody has a flag on each hip, and that's what you're going to have to grab, and that's considered going to be a tackle. I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. Not saying that. But eventually, that's where we're headed, because we already got to the point to where if you don't hit the quarterback in his navel or his belly button, you're hitting him too high, you're hitting him too low. You better hit him right there in the midsection, right there on his belly button. And oh yeah, by the way, it better not be too hard, because we're gonna go ahead and call you for unnecessary roughness, even though it's a game that was created to be physical. So that's where we're headed. To answer your question, how are they going to be able to tackle? That's the thing. I don't know if they're going to be able to.
Stan, I guess maybe I'm old school or maybe even a dinosaur. I don't really like 38 to 35. I don't like 45, 41. I like some defense thrown in there. Give me a good 24, 21 game. Give me a 20 to 17 with some touchdowns, with some field goals, and some good defense. Like I said, maybe I'm a dinosaur. Maybe I'm just old school, but I like a little bit of defense when I'm watching my NFL games. But
absolutely.
Stan, like you said, look, it's entertainment. I know it's big business. I know there's a lot of money being thrown around. So it is what it is. And we'll see how – I want to see – the refs are in a horrible situation, because they're the ones who have to deal with so many rule changes and interpreting these rules. So we'll see how it all plays out here. And in 2024. Stan, one other change that was made, and this one, man, I'm going to have to just read because this one is so confusing now to me on the kickoff. And I think this was first implemented in the XFL in 2020 now. And it says, so for the kicking team, players other than the kicker will line up with 1 foot on the receiving team's 40-yard line. The kicker cannot cross the 50-yard line until the ball touches the ground or a player in the landing zone or end zone. The kicking team players cannot move until the ball hits the ground or a player landing zone in the end zone. And then the receiving team, I still got to read all this because I'm still not sure about it. The setup zone, it's a 5-yard area from their own 30 to 35, and at least nine players have to be there, and at least 7 players with a foot on the 35-yard line. And then players not in their straining line must be lined up in the setup zone outside the hash marks, and all players in the setup zone cannot move until the ball has hit the ground or a player landing zone or the end zone. All right, Stan, what the heck is the landing zone?
The landing zone is just where the ball usually is going to be coming down at, somewhere probably within the 10-yard line to the goal line, things like that, where the ball is usually going to be received in a normal kickoff type of setting. That's the landing zone. At least that's the way I'm interpreting it. And if you've watched the XFL or the USFL, you've seen this kickoff format. You've seen it. You just didn't realize that that was going to be implemented into the NFL. And all of this comes down to safety. I remember back when they used to have a wedge with two to three guys that would actually be the lead blockers for the return guy. Yeah, notice how they outlawed that, because imagine having guys that, once again, these aren't the star players. These aren't the marquee guys that are on the kickoff team, that are trying to continue to stay on the team, not make the team because it's already regular season, but now they want to stay on the team. So they're going to be going balls to the wall. So they're getting a running start from the 30-yard line all the way to, let's say, the 5 or 10-yard line of the receiving team. They're running down there, and they're what you call the wedge busters. So you have about 2 to 3 guys. Usually within the wedge is probably a fullback, maybe a linebacker, maybe a really fleet-of-foot offensive lineman. And you have to go down there and you have to bust that wedge. You can't just go and go around it. No, you have to go through that wall. You got to bust that wedge. So imagine from the 30-yard line to, let's say, about the 15-yard line of the other side. About a good, 45, 50-yard sprint? And you're then running into a human wall? Probably going to have a few injuries. Maybe have a few head injuries, a few concussions, things like that. I remember guys that I played with, Jared Cooper, years ago, he was always a wedge buster. Isaiah Ikijuba, he was a wedge buster. So, you know, they wanted to first outlaw that. So then, okay, you know what? We've outlawed the wedge. Well, now it's just simply the same. It was still kicking from the 30-yard line to the 35, whichever one it is, and guys running all the way down there. Having that much of a running start for both teams, that was what they're trying to get away from, because they felt like that's a recipe for injuries, because a huge momentum head of steam is being built up by both the kickoff and the receiving team. So they're trying to eliminate that. And so they took a bite out of what the XFL is doing, and now they're going to try that. It's going to look very wonky coming up this football season, no doubt about that. But if you watch the XFL, I think they may even did it in the USFL, I'm not sure. But if you watch those spring leagues, then this is not a complete out of left field type of jab that's going to be thrown at you. It's something that you've at least seen before, but all of this is just trying to eliminate the plays within the game that you'll have the highest probability, or should I say the highest chance, from those injuries, because so much momentum is being built up. It's almost kind of like drag racing, but from opposite sides of the track. You know what I mean? Where you're way down there, I'm way down here. We're drag racing at each other. It's just going to be a collision just waiting to happen. That's what the NFL is trying to avoid.
And Stan, is the NFL also trying to bring back the kickoff return? Because we didn't have a kickoff return in the Super Bowl, and everybody, as we know, was watching that. And maybe the NFL rules committee is like, man, we need to bring the kickoff back and make it as safe as we possibly can. Because here was a couple other things. If the ball lands in the end zone or goes out of the end zone, the resulting touchback is now going to be at the 30-yard line. Mm-hmm. If the ball goes out of bounds, it's going to be at the 40. I think that was already.
Yeah, that's always been there.
Yeah, and then under the new rule, any kick that lands short of the 20-yard line, Stan, will be ruled down immediately and marked at the 40-yard line. So we're basically eliminating the squib kick or the pooch kick. Mm-hmm. That's yep. done. So
and then I don't want to cut you off, but and then if you want to go for an onside kick, you have to like notify the ref.
Yes.
Or like right. like so I just think that's like living in Minnesota and trying to avoid the snow. That's like living in the Pacific Northwest and let's say Seattle and trying to stay dry, trying to avoid the rain. Right. You can't legislate injuries. You can't legislate violence out of football. Football was created to be a physical and a violent sport. That's what it was created for. You're not going to be able to legislate all of it out of it. I understand the objective. I get it. You know, the CTE, the brain disease, you look at all the lawsuits that were going on against the NFL. So I understand all that, but I always say this, every football player, everybody that I've played with, everybody knew the risk when they signed up. They knew the risk when they entered college. They knew the risk when they entered the NFL, and they chose to enter because they felt the reward outweighed the risk. So I understand the NFL's, I understand the league's mindset. I get it. But you're not going to be able to legislate physicality and violence out of a game that was created just for that. You're just not.
You know what, Stan? I never played in the NFL, but if somebody came to me and I had a do-over and they said, Dennis, you're good enough to play in the NFL, but you might get CTE at a certain age, but you're going to make all this money. You're going to set up everybody financially for Lord knows how long. Stan, I got to admit, I'm probably, where do I sign up?
And what you just described is what is going through every college football player who wants to get drafted. Everybody in the NFL who's all of a sudden in training camp and you know what, they're trying to make the team. You just described what goes through everybody's mind, even going back to high school. And that's the thing. The reward outweighs the risk. Okay, you know what? Maybe I will get CTE when I'm 55 or 60 or something like that. Maybe I will get that. But you know what? I'll be able to buy my mom a house. You know what? I'll be able to go ahead and set up the rest of my family for generations to come. I can put everybody in a better position than they were before I went to the NFL. Most guys, most men, they're going to take that because you know what? Yeah, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to suffer injuries. I'm going to suffer the brunt of it. But you know what? At least my family will be taken care of. I'll take it a step further. I'm going to take it a much shorter step because this is on a much smaller scale. So I remember 2007. I remember in training camp, I tore my meniscus. I wound up having to obviously get it scoped or the arthroscopic surgery. So anybody listening, trust me, it's not that big of a deal. I was under anesthesia the entire time. It took about an hour. They go into your knee. They take a metal rod, go into your knee. There's a small camera on it. They do whatever they got to do. They cut out, I think, about 20% of my meniscus. And then I was right back normal. Took me about maybe a couple of days to recover. I think I missed the first three games of the preseason. I was right back for the final game of the preseason, played all 16 games that year. So I say all that to say this. You don't physically need a meniscus to be a football player or just be a fully functioning human being. Now, the meniscus is the cartilage that keeps your bones the bones in your knee from pressing together. Now, they told me, they said, hey, Mr. Rout, I'm going to tell you just like this. We have to remove this meniscus because it's now torn and it's now beat up. Now, you'll be just fine as a human being. Now, where most people start having knee problems at age 60, you might start having them at age 50. So it's going to take about 10 years of the comfortability out of your adult life, your midlife or whatever you want to call it. Oh, okay. So I'm going to have knee problems at 50 instead of 60, but I'll still be able to go ahead and make money and buy my mom a house and buy my dad a ranch and take care of my sister and all that. Oh, okay. Whatever. When's practice start tomorrow? So that's how players are going to think about it. Okay. Yeah. It's gruesome. Obviously mine was just my knee. So that was much smaller scale, but for players that are dealing with the brain injuries, the concussions, things like that, the reward far outweighs the risk. It just does. And fans don't want to hear that. I know they don't, but that's the truth about it. That's the ugly truth that players go through in the mental side of things.
I understand completely, Stan. All right, the NFL draft coming up. We'll have another edition of the Believe in Raiders podcast before then, and we'll have all your draft recaps following, I believe it's April the 27th. Not sure on that date. I'll have to double-check that, but the draft at the end of the month. All right, Raider Nation, that's going to do it for another edition of the Believe in Raiders podcast presented by BetOnline.ag. For my partner, Stanford Rapp, I'm Dennis Ackerman. May all your punts find the coffin corner.